This is the San Diego Hot Stove Podcast.
That's a hot one.
From the Padres Radio Network.
Shipley deals. Hunter hits one deep. Car rushed. Here he goes again. Lower deck, left field. Ball going, ball gone. Hunter Renfroe, three home run day. Welcome back, kid. Good to see you. Fun to watch you.
Here is Rich Herrera.
Well, it's time to get ready for the 2018 season. The World Series is in the bag. Astros are the champions. Can the Padres copy the magic of Houston? Time to start talking some Padres baseball as we get ready for next season here on our Hot Stove Podcast. I'm your host, Rich Herrera, joined by my compatriot, Ben Higgins, part of our broadcast crew here on the Padres Radio Network. And I wanted to bring you on, Ben, for this very first podcast because I think you, more than anybody else I know, has their thumb on the scale, you understand, and you understand the history of the San Diego Padres, and every season we talk about, wait till next year, wait till next year, wait till next year. So I wanted to get your thoughts on the 2017 season and what we can start looking forward to in 2018. How you doing?
I'm good, Rich. I mean, I think I went to my first game in 1978 when I was 3 years old. So I have certainly been riding the roller coaster with the Padres for several decades. If that makes me qualified, so be it. But I've certainly suffered and celebrated a little bit with Padres fans over the years.
It makes you old.
A little bit. At least I was only three. It could have been worse. I could have said, went to my first Padres game when I was 15 in 1978. Then I'd be really old.
Well, then, you know, we're also looking at, you know, we're going to start getting into some historic time for the San Diego Padres because you're going to get some milestones that they'll be hitting in the next couple seasons.
Absolutely. First season, 1969, we're approaching the 50th anniversary of Padres baseball. I still hope that one day I'll get to see that no-hitter. Yeah, I'm thrown by a Padres pitcher. It still hasn't happened. It's kind of almost statistically incredible that it hasn't, but that's just one of those things about being a Padres fan. You joke about the fact that still haven't seen that no-hitter yet, but maybe one of these days, Rich, we'll get to watch one.
What's the closest that you remember?
Oh, there's a number of great calls. I mean, the best story one, of course, the Clay Kirby game was I was actually even before my time, but that was when Clay Kirby actually got pulled after eight innings of a no-hitter because for a pinch hitter late in the game, and then the Padres blew it in the ninth inning, and it always has gone down. I think that was in the second season of Padres baseball. So it's always gone down as the curse of Clay Kirby. That's why they can't get one. They took a chance away from a pitcher long ago against the Dodgers, I would say in 2010 or 2011. They two outs in the ninth inning. And they not only blew the no-hitter, but they ended up losing the game. That would have been a combined no-hitter had they done it. But, you know, there's been a number of close calls over the years.
How many no-hitters have you seen personally?
I have seen two personally, both against the Padres, both back at Qualcomm Stadium. I saw A.J. Burnett's wild nine-walk, one-hit batter no-hitter against the Padres, and then a tamer one by Bud Smith, if anyone remembers who he was with the St. Louis Cardinals when he did it in the Padres. That was the two I've seen in person. I was also young. I was at Pedro Martinez's perfect game into the 10th inning when Biff Roberts broke that one up with a double at the Murph. He was trying to go for the 10-inning perfect game, but Padres ended up breaking that one up late.
I've seen a few. I've seen Josh Beckett throw one for the Marlins. I saw Edwin Jackson throw one for the Diamondbacks. Dallas Braden's perfect game on Mother's Day, which is one of the most remarkable feats I've ever seen. I've seen a number of them over the years. So, again, we hope that we'll see that one day at Petco Park in the very near future.
But the tension, the drama that builds, is one of the great things about baseball, is that you never know when it's going to happen. And you know, I'm the kind that after about three innings, I notice when there's still a zero in the hit column.
Right.
But it doesn't get serious until after five, I just start thinking, okay, well, now it's starting to get a little interesting. And then once you get through the sixth inning, every out then becomes, you can count it down from single digits to see if you get there. And it just, the tension like exponentially goes up with every batter. It's really, really cool.
Okay, well, let me go through the scenario then. Let's say it's a game against the Chicago Cubs that starts late in the afternoon out here. And you're doing, what time are you guys on Channel 10?
Usually 6:20 is one of our hits.
Okay, so that's perfect. So let's say it's a 4 o'clock start out here. right? You know where I'm going with this, don't you?
Yeah. To what do I do? What do I do?
What do
I run
do?
Down?
What is it? Let's say, yeah, it's a. Do you go down for the no hitter? Do you? Okay. So let's say even say I'll even take that. They say no, Ben. You've got to stay here at the studio. You can't leave. If it's 2 hours into the game and we're probably like the sixth, seventh inning, and you're doing the 6:20 hit on Channel 10, do you say the word no hitter?
Yes. I might not on Channel 10 because on TV you can't show any highlights during the game until it's over. But I am not one of those like jinx people. I think as a broadcaster, if you're not talking about it, you're not doing your job. I mean, what if someone flips onto the radio and they're listening to Padres radio and there's a no hitter in the eighth inning, but you know, Ted and Jesse they're going to tell you, they're not going to dance around it, because if you dance around it and people aren't paying attention, they may not know a no hitter is history is in progress.
The
you need to know that fact if it's happening.
The baseball gods will punish you. The baseball gods will punish you.
Believe me, every no hitter that's ever happened before, someone tried to jinx it and it didn't get jinxed. Every single time. It didn't get, when it happened, it didn't get jinxed. They all get jinxed, just not all of them actually fall apart in the end.
I will on purpose mention if it's going against if it's going for the other team, I will 100% start tweeting and mentioning, oh, look, that guy's got a no hitter. Have you seen that? Zero up there. No hitter. Tell everybody.
Oh, I've gotten blamed for jinxing them before. Social media just tears you apart when you mention it. And then, of course, it does get broken up a few minutes later, and then it's your fault and you're responsible. But I can take that as part of my job. If you want to blame me, I'll take the heat. And don't blame the pitcher who actually gave up the hit. Go ahead and blame the stupid broadcaster who tweeted about it.
Yeah, go blame the guy on Channel 10 that comes on after Designated Survivor. It's his fault that the no-hitter blew up.
Exactly. That makes a lot of sense.
Hey, before we get to the Padres, let's talk about the World Series. Obviously, you watched it. I mentioned Houston, who I'm hoping Sports Illustrated comes out with the next future cover saying San Diego Padres 2021 World Champions, the same way they did with the Houston Astros.
That was the greatest I told you so moment and cover in history. I mean, Sports Illustrated must have done a celebration dance when the Houston Astros won. You rarely get to look smart. You get to look dumb in media and broadcasting a lot. You rarely get such a clear-cut example of looking smart. So that was very cool for Ben Ryder and Sports Illustrated to have that cover that they could bring out from 3 years ago. It was a great series. I thought Game 2 was going to go down as, you know, one of the 10, 15 best World Series games of all times. And maybe it still does, but now completely overshadowed by the craziness of the 13-12 game. Unbelievable. Maybe Game 7 was not the most entertaining Game 7 ever, but the fact that the series went 7 and had two such unbelievable games before it, I think puts it down in history as one of the better World Series that we've seen.
Okay, so there's two things to take away from the World Series. Number one, why not us? If Houston could do it, why can't San Diego do it? It was just a number of years ago that the Houston Astros are losing 100 games per season, and you had like one player that you would want to watch in Jose Altuve and a bunch of guys that you didn't even care about while their AAA ball club was playing for the national championship. Fast forward a couple of years, the San Diego Padres are a year away from the El Paso ball club playing and winning the PCL, and the ball club struggling in the big leagues, and you see all this talent rising to the top. So should the Houston Astros World Series victory give you some hope in San Diego?
You know, I think you should have already had some hope, because that's the way sports is. No one thinks it's possible until it happens. I mean, the Red Sox, 2004, the Cubs last year, the Astros had never even won a single World Series game in their history, and they win the World Series this year. Sports is filled with examples of teams that were nothing. I mean, the New England Patriots, when I was growing up, they stunk. They're terrible. They were a laughing stock franchise in the NFL. Well, guess what? Now, they're the dominant franchise for a decade and a half in the National Football League. Sports goes in cycles. Every team has a chance. If you get enough smart people, and I do think the Padres have some smart people, you get good ownership, a good general manager, a smart manager. It doesn't guarantee anything, because you need luck. You know, you need to hit on a couple of prospects, maybe a trade, a free agent signing or two. Stay healthy. That's a huge thing that's sometimes out of your control. But absolutely, it is possible. Any team can do it. And the Padres certainly at least have that stew brewing that, you know, you can say in a couple of years could yield a product similar to what we saw for the Houston Astros this year.
Do you think the recipes are quite similar?
They are. Absolutely, they're similar. I mean, you know, the Astros ended up having to lose a lot more games than the Padres have so far in their kind of rebuilding turnaround process. I mean, they were a perennial 100-loss team, and while some people thought the Padres were going to lose 100 games, and I actually thought it was certainly possible going into the season, they didn't even come close. They far exceeded what people thought. So maybe without the same horrific, you know, building up process, the Padres can get the same result. When you look at prospects like Cal Quantrill, like Fernando Tatis Jr., you know, that could be
Mackenzie Gore. Yeah, he's the man.
I mean, these guys could be the Dallas Keuchel, the Alex Bregman, the George Springer for the Padres in a couple of years. Will they be? I don't know. That's the great thing about baseball. You know, a lot of things can happen between now and then, but they certainly are on track to give it a shot and put together something similar.
So here's my take on this, Ben. This is from a historical standpoint of seeing this up close and personal. So I've been around the game for a little while, and I saw the Oakland A's during Moneyball up close and personal. I saw Tampa Bay go from the Devil Rays to the Rays to the World Series to the Beast to the East. I see a similar recipe, like we were talking about that stew that's brewing. But the one thing I see that's different here in San Diego is Oakland was predicated upon the big three, and they went out and found as many arms as they could and had three that rose to the top. But outside of that, there were some position players, but they weren't the Fernando Tatises that we're talking about. Tampa Bay was all about arms and the position players that came along for the ride. Here, I think I see a better balance, kind of like you do in Houston, where you've got some good arms that are coming through the Cal Quantrills. I mentioned Mackenzie Gore. There are some other arms that are down there ready to go, but you also have the Josh Naylors, the Fernando Tatis Juniors. There's as many potential everyday starters that contribute on the field as there are on the mound.
Every team's going to have a different mix. You know, every championship team, even. Some are going to have that dominating rotation, and then you don't need as much offense. If you know how to win a 2-1 or a 3-2 game and you do it with pitching and defense, others are going to just have some bombers, and you can put up 6-7 runs. And, you know, your pitching is good, but it doesn't have to be great. Maybe there's a balance in there as well. You've got a good offense. You've got a good pitching staff. Neither has to be, you know, the best in the league if you combine them together. Every mix is a little bit different. There's no one formula. I think we've learned that plenty of times over the years in baseball. There's no one formula to win a championship. You just have to be able to score more runs than the other team. And part of that's holding them down. Part of that's putting runs together, whether it's through base running and manufacturing runs or sitting back and waiting for the 3-run home run like Earl Weaver used to do. There's different ways to win baseball games. And the Padres, I think the process that they're going through, everyone talks about, well, we're waiting for these young guys to mature and to turn into the players. And that is part of it. But the other is figuring out how they're going to win games once they get there. What kind of team are they going to be? And it's kind of up to Andy Green to figure that out as he goes along, because you can have a great team, but if you try to put, you know, the circle in the square hole or the round peg in the square hole, you're not going to be as successful. You got to find the right combination of players and then the right style for those guys to play.
All right, let's take the other half of the World Series, which is the Dodgers having an amazing season, coming up one game short. Did you see who the odds-on favorite to win the World Series is next year?
Is it the Dodgers?
Absolutely 110% correct. Moments after the World Series.
I think that's a mistake. I think that's a mistake, though, Rich.
Tell me why.
Well, you know, they say there's nothing harder in sports, and especially in baseball, in repeating. I mean, when was the last time we had a back-to-back World Series champion? Yankees, around the turn of the century?
Right.
It's very hard to win twice in a row. The only thing I think harder than winning twice in a row is getting right to the edge, to a Game 7, to a World Series, and then losing and then coming back the next year and then having a great year. And I'm not saying the Dodgers are never going to win again. They're going to be good. They're going to be right there. But, you know, they had to use pitching all the way into November. You know, they went for it. That takes a toll into the next season on teams. And I think the Dodgers are going to have a bit of a hangover next year that's going to make it difficult for them to duplicate their success of this season. I'd actually be more worried about the Dodgers, and maybe this is bad news for the Padres fans since they're kind of aiming toward 2019 in a playoff run, is in 2019 after they kind of get over the hangover next season.
Well, it's interesting. Jim Hickey, who's now just got hired as the pitching coach for the Chicago Cubs, he was the last pitching coach when the Houston Astros went to the World Series years ago. And he commissioned a study to have their front office figure out what was the effect on the pitchers the next season after pitching longer, having a shorter respite, having a shorter recovery time, and actually being delayed in getting ready for the next season because they do all these things. They win. They go on. Wait a minute. What's on ABC? Is that Kimmel? Jimmy Kimmel? I want to make sure.
Jimmy Kimmel, yeah, absolutely. Yeah, well, after sure. Dancing with the Stars,
yes,
of course.
Yes.
You know.
So they're going to go on Dancing with the Stars. They're going to go on with Jimmy Kimmel. They're doing all these things. Everybody's telling them how great they are. They're going to all these banquets. They have less time because they played a month longer than everybody else to recover, and then they got to get ready for the next season. So there's definitely a hangover, especially for pitchers, the next season. So if I'm the Dodgers, I'm looking, what do I do with Yu Darvish? What do I do with Audrey Ether? They have a lot of questions they have. Unfortunately for Padres and everybody else in National League West, they have a lot of answers, but there's a team that I don't think is as settled as a team that came within a game of winning the World Series.
Yeah, they're not going to be bad with Cody Bellinger and Corey Seager and, you know, that young core. What's scary about the Dodgers is they have the virtually unlimited payroll. They didn't really even use it. I mean, half of the guys that were contributing in their playoff run were minimum salary guys they developed in their own system. I mean, they can start shedding some big money in the next couple of years and then be able to reload with gigantic free agents to complement those players. The Dodgers are always going to be dangerous in the National League West, which makes the job for the Padres that much tougher. But the good news, Rich, is it's the wild card era, and you don't have to finish first. Heck, you don't even have to finish second. The third-place team in the National League West, the Colorado Rockies, made the playoffs this year. Now, didn't work out for them. They didn't win that wild card game, but we've seen it before where you sneak in, you get hot at the right time in October, you win that wild card game, you upset someone in the first round, and then you're in the National League Championship Series and you're 8 wins away from a World Series title. It has happened. It will happen again. It doesn't mean you have to win a division to be a world champion.
Well, it's so interesting. You look at the Dodgers, the emergence of Chris Taylor. You saw Corey Seager. You saw Bellinger. You saw Austin Barnes. You saw all these young kids, and you're absolutely right. So do they get rid of the Ethiers? Do they get rid of – I mean, Jock Peterson is a kid. Do they get rid of Jock Peterson? I mean, they have so many different questions that they're going to have to answer. The Giants are going to have to retool. They've completely reshuffled their coaching staff. Does Arizona feel like they're close enough where they don't have to do anything? Do they have to reload? What does the Colorado Rockies have to do? So as you see the Padres on the rise, there's a bunch of great teams. I would argue that the National League West could be as deep and as thick as the American League East was a decade ago with the Yankees and the Red Sox and the Orioles and the Blue Jays and the Rays.
It sure looks that way. But then again, we thought the Giants were a playoff contender going into this season, and they turned into one of the worst teams in all of baseball. You're just a couple of bad breaks and injuries away from it falling apart, and that's true whether you're the Rockies, the Diamondbacks, less so the Dodgers, but even the Dodgers. I mean, hey, they lost 10 games in a row.
They
lost 10 games in a row. And, you know, some teams wouldn't have been able to recover from that. I give credit to Dave Roberts for, you know, he's got a ton of talent. They should have bounced back, and they did. But some teams don't recover from something like that. And it can happen to anyone, no matter how good you are. You just get in a bad funk, a bad rut, a couple of injuries, and all of a sudden you're 20 games out and your season's over. I mean, it happens to everyone, Rich.
Absolutely. All right, so how does Ben Higgins fill his time without doing the Padres post-game show during the offseason?
Oh, it's actually, you know, I got to call a college football game last week. I went to Stetson University in Florida. You know, your old neck of the woods, somewhere between Orlando and Daytona Beach. Florida unnerves me, Rich. Everything's flat and you can't see. There's no monuments ever. I don't know which way is west, north.
There's
it's all just swamp and trees and flat. And it was fine. I got USD, got a big win, and they're looking like they're going to go to the Division I FCS playoffs.
Which would be awesome.
Might be doing a basketball game as well coming up for USD. So, you know, I'll try to keep a little bit busy during the offseason. Yeah, and I got TV 5 days a week. So, and then I got the boys at home. I got the wife. We do like to see each other a little bit more when baseball season's out. So that's part of it as well.
I do have this sign that my wife hangs up during the season that says, "This marriage will temporarily be suspended due to baseball."
Yeah, exactly.
So, so you got to make up for all that time. What do you miss the most? This is the last thing we'll ask you, because you're actually the first guest on our podcast. And then, well, I don't know, can I technically call you a guest since you're part of our crew?
Well, whatever you want. I'm a guest. I'm a co-host. I can go either way. Yeah. But, you know, I miss the daily, the fact that there's a baseball game on every night. Football is once a week. You wait, you talk about things, you talk about more things, you get tired of talking about things, you got to wait more. Baseball, you turn the page every single day. There's a new story, there's a new game, it keeps on moving. And while that can be a grind when you're going through 162 games, it's also the best thing because you don't have to wait for the next game to come. It's already there. You turn the page and you're moving on. But hey, we're already over a month into the off season. Spring training is going to be here before you know it.
How long does it take you to start watching Ken Burns baseball?
I'm right about that point. Now that the world, you know, I had the World Series, I've taken my like week of no baseball off, and now you just start kind of feeling like, where is it again? Where I'm missing it. It's been a week. I'm ready for spring training to start.
Yesterday, I was sitting on the couch with my son. He wanted to watch 42. So then we got done watching 42. I said, well, let's watch Ken Burns baseball, inning 5 and 6. And he's like, Dad, really? I'm like, there's no baseball tonight. What do you expect me to do?
You know, you can only watch so much hockey, you know, during the winter.
Yeah.
It's just the same. They just go around the ice and skate around. It's not baseball.
No, the thing that gets me is I love college football on Saturday, right? Game day. You get the early SEC games, then you get the Big Ten games, then you get the Pac-12 games. So you have football all day long. And for me, that's my best sports day during the fall. But it's not baseball where I can have a game 7 days a week. There's always a game on. So, you know, probably around Tuesday or Wednesday, I'm sitting there watching Ben Higgins on Channel 10 going, I love you, Ben, but I wish there was a game on to watch.
Yeah, you know, that's the little secret is during the week in the winter, we're just making up stories, you know, things that would have been tiny stories in the summer. Hey, we blow it up. I'll give it a full minute because we need something to talk about in between all these games. So if you're a PR person, the great time for sports is right now. If you want some coverage, drop a story in the middle of a week during a boring football season or a bye week or something, because we're definitely looking for something to put on television.
If you could find like an all-you-can-eat rib contest or a taco-eating contest and you need a special correspondent, let me know, will you?
If it's local, I'm all about it. I'm all about the local San Diego stuff. So, yeah, absolutely. We'll send you out to cover the all-you-can-eat apple pie-eating contest.
There you go. Turkey's coming up and everything. All right. Hey, Ben, thank you so much for joining us in our first podcast. We'll be talking to you throughout the off-season as we get ready for spring training. And if I don't talk to you, can you imagine that it's already this time that I can actually wish you a happy Thanksgiving? I think I'm the first of this year to wish you a happy Thanksgiving.
You are, but hey, you know, I went to the store the other day. They already have all the Christmas decorations up for sale. You know, hey, then Christmas is over. They put the Valentine's Day stuff, and you know what Valentine's Day means, Rich?
Spring
training pitchers and catchers report on Valentine's Day. So it will be there before you know it.
There you go. Hey, Ben, thanks. We'll catch up with you real soon. Tell people how they find you on Twitter.
At Ben Higgins SD, anytime, Rich.
By the way, he got that before someone else stole it because there was a couple other people that were looking to use that Twitter handle. So Ben was able to get that first. I'm glad of that. Ben, thanks, man.
Take care.
Let's continue our podcast by catching up with a guy that I don't think he has an off season because on my MLB at Bat app on my phone, Padres.com, MLB.com, it seems like every day AJ Cassaville is posting over and over and over again. So let's check in with him on our very first Hot Stove podcast of the offseason for the San Diego Padres. AJ, did you get any time off?
I'll get some time off a little after Christmas when I go on my honeymoon. But for now, no, there's no off season on Padres.com. I'll be updating pretty much daily through the holidays.
Okay, so for those that took the postseason off, kind of gave themselves a little bit of a breather, what's going on with the Padres? What's all the latest news that you think people need to be aware of?
Well, there were some minor transactions. Essentially, the way free agency works is 5 days after the final day of the World Series, all players have to come off the 60-day disabled list, and every team must have their roster pared down to 40 guys. And so in that process, the Padres the Padres placed on waivers four guys, Hector Sanchez, Tim Melville, Jared Cozart, and Christian Friedrich, all of whom cleared waivers and declined a trip to the minor leagues, opted instead for free agency. So they're all free agents. Jolys Chacín, Eric Ivar, and Craig Stammen are also free agents. And so with all of those moves, essentially what it does is the Padres roster is now down to 38 players. That leaves room for obviously maybe a signing or two, and they can kind of tinker with it as the offseason goes forward.
Does that preclude any of those guys coming back to San Diego?
Not at all. I think you look at what happened with Hector Sanchez last year. He did the exact same thing. He was sent essentially. He chose free agency again, and he signed a deal with the Padres again, and he made the roster out of camp. And so I think it with some of the other free agents, some of the bigger guys, the Padres would look to bring back. I think they'd be very happy if they could bring back Jolys Chacín and Craig Stammen, both of whom were pretty useful for them last season. I don't think any of those moves necessarily mean guys aren't coming back. It's varying degrees, though. I think it would be a little more surprising if a Christian Friedrich or a Jared Cozart, who missed time with a couple of elbow injuries and didn't get a ton of opportunity in San Diego, I think it would be a little more surprising if they came back. But I think for the most part, none of those guys are definitely off the table for the Padres.
For me, if I'm ranking, I want to see Stammen come back. Then I want to see Chacín come back, because if you look at it, there's a little bit of arms and you have actually more depth in the starting rotation with the guys that established themselves this year than when we walked into Peoria last year at the beginning of spring training and all five jobs were up for grabs.
Yeah, I think Chacín might be – it's interesting because Stammen was so valuable to the Padres after April. You really can't put you can't put a value on what he meant in terms of just being kind of a veteran guy and a young bullpen, but you can put a value on some of the things he did with, I mean, he'd come in, he'd work 2 2/3, he'd work 3-inning stints, or he'd come in and pitch the eighth and get out of a jam or something like that. And so he's definitely the type of guy you want on your staff. I think he'll command some interest because what pitching staff wouldn't want a guy like Craig Stammen? I know he is very interested in coming back to San Diego if the right offer's there. And I think it's the same kind of deal with Chacín. He obviously thrived at Petco Park this season, so I could see that a return there potentially be something being worked out.
You know, and I look at it, heck, if you're the Houston Astros and you're A.J. Hinch, wouldn't your life been a lot easier if you had someone like Craig Stammen out of the bullpen in the World Series?
Yeah, or Brad Hand. I know they were one.
There's another one, exactly. Oh, go ahead, AJ.
I will say they did end up winning the World Series. So for all the Brad Hand jokes that I was ready to make about the Astros and how they should have traded for him, it seemed to work out just fine for him.
You know,
won every bullpen battle.
Yeah, they did. They really did. And were so we were just talking about this with Ben Higgins before you came on the podcast that, you know, you look at the Dodgers, they've got a big window of opportunity, but they got a lot of questions. And then I was blown away that the most vaunted bullpen in all of baseball really kind of disappeared towards the end of that World Series in the Dodgers.
Yeah, they're up there among the most vaunted bullpens. I think it was almost, aside from Kenley Jansen, it was almost a little patchwork. And if you look at the way Dave Roberts managed the bullpen, and this is not to say it's how I would have I don't necessarily disagree with how he managed the bullpen, but what he did was he put those guys in spots where every single guy came in a leveraged situation, and every single guy had their guy to get out or their two batter stress to get out, to the point where if one person didn't have it that night or if one person got knocked around, there was almost no contingency plan. I think we saw that in game. We definitely saw it in game two of the World Series. We saw it in game five of the World Series too. Game two, they got to the 10th inning and had used pretty much everyone. And all of a sudden they're throwing Brandon McCarthy out there with the World Series potentially on the line. And so, you know what? It's not surprising because that Astros offense is just so resilient. They seem to fight, they seem to battle back from just about anything. And sometimes you got to give credit to the other guys too. The Dodgers bullpen is still very good. Brandon Morrow, an old friend of San Diego, is a free agent this offseason. I'm sure he proved himself with the season he had to command maybe a bigger deal than he had this year. But I mean, ultimately Craig Stammen, he's in that same boat. He's someone out there could use him, especially the way the game seems to be trending toward bullpens.
Yeah. And there's this trend. I'm not sure I like it that use starters less and rely more on a bullpen. I just don't like it. It almost the antithesis of what we used to see where, hey, if you're going to start a game, finish a game. Now it seems like the pendulum swung so far to the other side. I don't know if this trend's going to work in baseball.
Well, it's one thing for the regular season and it's another thing for the postseason. I think if you look at what the Dodgers did in the first two rounds, it worked perfectly for them.
Right.
And ultimately what it comes down to is maybe having some contingency plans for if your relievers aren't incredibly effective. I mean, if we want starters to go deep into games, but there's no one out there that disagrees with the usefulness of a starter who can pitch seven or eight innings. But Yu Darvish, in my opinion, should have started game seven, and Yu Darvish, in my opinion, should have been removed after eight batters. I think it became pretty clear pretty fast that he didn't have it. And when you're in a situation like that, that's not where you want to get beat riding a starter deep into a game. So it's situational. But I think we can all assign value to what Justin Verlander did. We can all assign value to what Clayton Kershaw did in the first two rounds. We can all assign value to those types of performances, but it's not the starter working deep into a game is not dead entirely, but if you can get the best matchups possible when you have situations where guys get rest, I'm not opposed to that.
Did you get a chance, and I know you've written about Matt Stairs coming over. I wanted to get your thoughts on Stairs coming over to be the new hitting instructor. What is his strength? What do you think his immediate goal short-term and then long-term for this club is?
Well, I think short-term, it's pretty obvious. He wants to get the on-base percentage up. And that's he brought that up kind of unprompted. That's where I wanted my interview with him to go. That's what I wanted to talk to him a lot about. He brought it up before even I could bring it up. And I think anyone who watches the Padres knows that that's the issue. It's not they hit plenty of home runs. That's not the problem. The problem is they have too many young hitters who maybe get outside themselves, who don't necessarily understand their strengths, and are swinging at pitches that aren't in the zone. That, you know what, even if they were in the zone, maybe they shouldn't be swinging at a 2-1 slider that's just on the outside corner, you know? And so I think that's what he wants to fix first and foremost. His strengths as a hitting coach, from what I hear, he's an excellent communicator. He seems like a very, very, very positive guy. Now, this is mostly hearsay. We need to kind of wait and see it in action, but it seems like he succeeded in some ways in Philadelphia with a very similar cast of young hitters, and that's what the Padres would like to see happen in San Diego.
And it's funny, he is a product of Moneyball. Got there after Mark McGwire was traded when the A's were the first team that really started stressing the on-base percentage and seeing and trying to draw more walks than you would strikeouts. So that plays right into what we've seen with the Padres, where it was way too many strikeouts and too many guys giving up at bats all season long.
Yeah, and you know what impressed me the most? Because obviously I followed Matt Stairs' career and I know what he did, but he had some really impressive numbers. I mean, 19 major league seasons with a .356 on-base percentage. That's hard to do. That's pretty incredible. And I think there's one home run that stands out in my mind, the home run he hit for Philadelphia against Los Angeles in the, I believe it was the 2009 NLCS. And he sticks in your mind as a guy that maybe could deliver a home run, a pinch hit situation or a big spot. But but 356 on base over 19 years, that's more than just a one-time, that's more than just an off-the-bench power guy. That's a guy who took his at-bats pretty seriously. And so the question is, can he bring it over into a teaching aspect? And from everything I've heard, it sounds like he has the right mindset to do so. We obviously need to wait and see what kind of effect he has with the Padres.
And I've known Matt since, 1999, 2000, when he was with the Oakland A's. And I can't believe it. And when I read that stat, I was like, I followed Matt all the way through his career because we've known each other. But 19 years in the big leagues, that's a lot. Because when you think of him, you think of that big softball swing that he would have when he's trying to hit one for the downs. But he was a guy that would work it at bat and was really a smart hitter.
Yeah, and if you look at his career, it seems like precisely what the Padres want their hitters to become. He was smart enough at the plate, it seemed like, and then when he got his pitch, he did damage with it. And the Padres seem willing to do damage with just about every pitch they get, and maybe aren't selective enough. And that really extends almost up and down the lineup. I'm not sure there's a hitter on the Padres right now you'd say, you know what, that guy is. That's a pretty selective hitter. That guy is patient enough at the plate. There's room for improvement almost across the board.
See, I want to put him and Carlos Asuaje in a room, lock them in together, and see what kind of genius stuff they come up with. Because Asuaje, when he came up at the end of the season, he was one that kind of was trending that way.
Yeah, Asuaje, I would say, based on the 2017 season, he had the best quality of at bat, just in terms of the pitches he spit on and the pitches he took and the pitches he chose to swing at. It seemed like there were none wasted. But I would argue there's even some room for improvement there. I think the one guy the Padres really missed in that capacity was Alex Dickerson. He did that really well for them in 2016. If he comes back from his back injury, that'll certainly help fit that mantra. But like I said, across the board, I think there's room for improvement. There's room for improvement with Will Myers, Hunter Renfroe, Austin Hedges, Manny Margot. And that's not to say they aren't on base guys at all. I think Will Myers proved for a little bit in 2016 that he could be. Manny Margot got on base at I want to say like a 315 clip, and that's probably around the league average. But there's room for growth for all of those guys. And Matt Stairs, I think the Padres hope that he's the right communicator for it.
Well, I think the proof is the pudding. How many solo shots that the Padres hit? It seemed like all they put up was single digits and didn't drive anybody in except for that home run. Too many solo shots.
Yeah, that's part of the problem. Home runs are obviously up across baseball this year, and the Padres set all sorts of franchise records. But if no one's on base, you're not driving guys in when you hit them, and they finished dead last in the majors in on base percentage for each of the last two seasons. And so clearly there's room for improvement. You're going to get lower on base percentages when you work with young hitters. But part of that is guys that need to change their approach. And I think with some guys, it might be a smaller fix than others. We saw Austin Hedges had some pretty good at bats earlier in the season. I think later in the season, he got a little chase happy. And so it comes down to that. That's the number one key that the Padres need to fix this offseason. Their on-base percentage needs to get better if they want to trend in the right direction.
Hey, AJ, if AJ Preller goes shopping, what kind of store is he walking into? If you see him going out looking for free agents, what type of free agent do you think he might go after? Because they're not going to go after JD Martinez, obviously. They're not there yet. But what do you think some of the holes they might be able to fill with the guy like a Jolie Chassin, where they take a nominal risk and they get a reward?
I think you're looking at exactly those kind of guys. Chassin type players who could essentially fill a void for one or two seasons, could become valuable assets potentially in the trade market. And guys who, if you look at the young players in the organization, if you look at Fernando Tatis coming up at shortstop, Luis Urias coming up at second base, some of the pitchers at San Antonio, I think the Padres think they'll have a lot of answers by 2019, 2020 in terms of which of those guys are capable of contributing at the major league level. And so they need to find guys to essentially fill the void. So I think Preller goes out this offseason. He's looking for a shortstop. He's looking for two at minimum starting pitchers. He's looking for depending on what happens with Craig Stammen and maybe Brad Hand, he's looking for two relievers and I would say a backup catcher as well.
You know, and I'm looking at that shortstop. I'm trying to figure out, you know, who kind of fits that bill for shortstop that you can go out there and find 2 years until the guys in the minor leagues are ready to go.
Well, one name out there that interests me, and it just kind of seems to fit the pattern where they've signed one-year guys for the last 3 years, is Alcides Escobar. He is a better defender than any of the guys they've had over the last 3 years. Now, he's nowhere near the defender he was when he was winning his Gold Glove in Kansas City. But the Padres' starting rotation was number one in the majors in ground ball rate, and their infield defense was not especially good. And that, I think, had something to do with some of the poor results from their starting pitchers. Obviously, some of the blame goes to the pitcher himself, but with a better infield defense and with maybe a guy like Escobar anchoring shortstop, it could be a bigger boost than just that shortstop. Now, Escobar's offensive numbers are way down. He also fits the mold as a guy who's not a great on base guy, but there's not a ton of options at shortstop on the open market. And the Padres aren't going to go after a big name. They're not going to trade pieces for the future to get someone who they feel like who's only theoretically a stopgap option until Fernando Tatis Jr. arrives.
Are there any internal options for them
at shortstop
that you could roll with in? I mean, if you can't get that stopgap, you still need a shortstop every day.
I don't think there's internal options in the form of Yonhair Solarte, Alan Cordoba, but there's not a internal option who you feel comfortable with as an everyday shortstop. So they will find someone in free agency. I'm fairly confident about that.
I wanted to ask you about one guy that I thought was just amazing. Hit all day long, had a great season, but just could not find a position. I couldn't figure out what kind of position he was supposed to be in, because there are times where I would wander into the other clubhouse and I'd sit and I'd talk with managers and they'd, hey, who's that big guy playing in the outfield over there? He's too big to be in. I said, he's a second baseman. I go, he's too big to be an infielder. He doesn't have a natural position, but the guy could hit, and at times he did a really, really good job for the San Diego Padres. That's Jose Perella. Where do you forecast him? What's his future, do you think?
I think he's a favorite in left field going into next season, and he might be due for some regression, but I really like the way he swung the bat. And he swung hard, and he was selective enough to the point where when he got pitches to hit, he did some damage with them. I think he made some serious strides in left field from when he arrived in the beginning of June to the end of the season, to the point where I would have called him an average left fielder by September. And that's saying something, considering that's not a position that he had played every day until last year. And so outfield is interesting. I think there's a lot going on with a lot of question marks. I'd say Manny Margot is the answer in center field. And after that, there's maybe seven guys fighting for roster spots. But I would say entering the season, Jose Perella is the favorite to start in left field.
Yeah, I would agree, because I thought Perella deserved to play every day. Margot, I'm sold on. I think he's the next all-star. Renfro's got to cut down on the strikeouts and raise the on-base percentage. And then what do you do with Jankowski? You've got Dickerson if he comes back. There's a lot of guys, Jabari Blash, that are all trying to get there, but there just seems to be just a glut of guys and no one's established themselves.
Yeah, and I think there's seven guys. There's seven guys that have question marks entering the offseason, fighting for probably four spots behind Margot. And now I think Renfro and Perella are the favorites. Perella because of what he did last year, and Renfro because of what the organization has committed to him. They obviously have made it clear that they feel he's their right fielder of the future. But there's other options. Franchi Cordero was somewhat impressive. He took a step back after a great start. He struck out a little bit too much, but if he can maybe take a few strides, he's an option. Alex Dickerson, I think if he can come back, and that's a huge if, because I have question marks about back injuries for 26-year-olds, but if he can come back healthy, he would be a huge boost to the lineup, and he'd fit too. He'd be a really nice fit with to kind of work his way in with righties. I mean, he's a good left-handed hitter, especially against right-handed pitching, and he could kind of mix his way in with Perella and Renfroe in the corners. And then I think in center field, you've got kind of a Jankowski-Caesar battle for the backup center field spot and kind of utility speed guy.
Do you see the Padres being aggressive in the Rule 5 draft? I mean, listen, I think they've been the most successful Rule 5 team over the last couple of years in all of Major League Baseball, but there were times when you're carrying the three Rule 5 guys that it hampers your winning every day. But I look at a guy like Luis Torrens. I saw a head and shoulder difference in him catching beginning of the season towards the end of the year.
I expect him to be aggressive. I know that they probably don't know the answer to that question yet, because I think there's still a couple weeks before guys have to be protected from the Rule 5 draft. And so we don't really know yet who's available. But based on precedent, the Padres are probably going to be aggressive. And I think it's more likely than not they pick someone who fits that Miguel Diaz, Luis Perdomo mold, because they've proven that, hey, you can fit a guy into the bullpen who's got a live arm, have him throw one inning stints, and you can have him on your roster. And both those guys project as potential long-term big league rotation pieces.
For the Rule 5 guys that you have this year, do you think we'll see them on the big league roster, or do they return back to the minor leagues to finish their seasoning?
I have a hard time believing either any of the three are on the opening day roster. I think maybe towards September, toward the end of the year. But all three really need time. They really need experience, and they did not get that in San Diego because the Padres obviously had to keep them on their roster and weren't playing them a ton. And so I think you see Torrens is either at single or double A. Miguel Diaz probably at double A. Alan Cordoba, I know a lot of people want to see him at shortstop, want to see what he has to do. I think they might play him in more of a utility type role where he plays around the infield and the outfield as well. And then that could come at triple A or potentially double A, but I don't see any of them making the roster out of camp. I will say I wouldn't have been surprised if Miguel Diaz made it as a reliever. The Padres would be interested in giving him a chance, except that I think they see him as a long-term starter.
No, I'm right there with you. I think you're spot on that. All right, so what does A.J. Cassaville do during the offseason besides honeymoon plans and writing every day?
You pretty much nailed it. I actually, I'm kind of a big hockey guy, so I took a vacation up to Edmonton last weekend and watched a couple hockey games there. Saw Connor McDavid, the future of hockey, actually get shut down by the Detroit Red Wings. So it was a good time. I try and stay in tune with everything that's going on in the Padres, but I also get to maybe take some time, go some places. I have family in New Jersey that I go see. And so it's essentially a balance of being around for Padres news, but also the chance to maybe to be around for that news in places other than San Diego, maybe see some people, do some cool things.
Hey, listen, you have to. By the way, who's your hockey team?
I'm a New Jersey Devils fan. That's probably the team. If I'm a fan of a team in any sport, that's probably my favorite sports team.
Now, would you consider yourself a long-suffering Devils fan or a we're going to get them this year fan?
I've seen three Stanley Cups in my lifetime, and so I don't think that qualifies as long-suffering. Now, it's been 14 years since the last one, but they've been pretty decent in those 14 years. So, you know what? The last 4 or 5 years, if that's the price I have to pay for the childhood I had as a Devils fan, I'm happy with it.
By the way, do you still have the last T-shirt from their last Stanley Cup championship or a hat or something?
I have that T-shirt buried at the bottom of my closet, and I can't bring myself to throw it out until they win another one.
No, you can't. I mean, I've got T-shirts. My wife goes, "What? Seriously, do you really need this T-shirt from 30 years ago? Do you know what that means to me? We're not getting rid of that T-shirt."
Yeah, and you know what? If they win it again, I'll happily buy a new one and I'll replace the T-shirt.
There you go. Hey, AJ, thank you so much for coming on the podcast. We're going to hit you up a couple more times before we get down to Peoria. I wish this to Ben Higgins earlier, and I guess it's time now since we're in November. I can wish you a happy Thanksgiving if I don't talk to you before Turkey Day.
All right, happy Thanksgiving to you too, Rich.
Could you believe I can't believe it's already. Listen, we're going to be sitting in Peoria before you know it, right?
I'm going to enjoy the off season first before I start worrying about Peoria.
Hey, AJ, thanks so much for doing this. We appreciate it.
Yeah, thanks, Rich.
Hey, that's going to do it for our first Hot Stove podcast of the off season. Appreciate you spending some time with us. Had a nice conversation with our very own Ben Higgins, part of our broadcast crew here on the Padres Air Network, and again, AJ Cassaville, who works harder than anybody else. Don't tell anybody else I said that, but the guy does really work hard. Gave us a pretty good insight. So if you look at it as we start getting ready for free agency, we'll talk more every week, get together, and we'll bring different folks on. We're going to have a lot during the offseason. So make sure that you subscribe to our podcast. You can find it, Padres Radio Network Podcast, on Apple. On Apple Podcast. Also, I'll just ask you this. We put the Padres Rewind. We're going to put them all up on one feed, so it's easy. All you got to do is subscribe, and every time we do a podcast, it'll automatically be sent to your iPhone or iPad or however you listen to podcasts on Apple. But I do ask one favor, if you don't mind. Please leave us a rating and a review, because that helps spread the word about our podcast that we have here during the off season. So again, please go to Apple Podcast now. Rate us, review us, give us some feedback. You can always find me at RBI Rich, or you can tweet to us at Padres Radio Network, our Facebook page. We're going to have all of this on our Facebook page. We'll have even more during the offseason as well. Facebook.com/Padres Radio, and of course, our website, PadresRadio.com. So until we get together next week, thanks for joining us, everybody, here on the Padres Radio Network.
This is the Padres Radio Network. Like and follow us on Facebook.com/Padres Radio. Sign up for our newsletter on PadresRadio.com.